Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Wednesday, September 12th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs and for the first segment of the program today. So I'm going to get started because we had a great day in gold today. Believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, we finally made it over 1,200 once again. So we're at 760. 760 today. It was actually about $3 higher. It was up about 10 earlier, but we'll take $7.60 at 1206.70. Silver was up 11 pennies today at 14.33. Platinum was up $8 at 803, and palladium was up one at 983. The USDX today, of course, was had a little bit of pressure, down 0.24 at 94.86. Crude oil is back up over 70. It was up 93 cents today at 70.18. And the paper markets today, they're still heading upward, most of them anyway. The Dow was up 27 points today, 25,998. Can't keep at that 26,000 level. The NASDAQ was down 18 points, 7,954, and the S&P was up one at 2,888. 10-year yield, 2.96%. The euro, 116. European Asian markets were mixed. Usually, it looks like the European markets were a little bit stronger. The Asian markets were weaker. Let's see. Everything is good again in the land of Oz. And joining us today, to where we try to stay out of the land of Oz, Wendy, we have Wendy Wilson joining us with Apothecary Herbs. Hi, Wendy.
Oh, good morning, or afternoon, really.
Good morning.
It's afternoon already. I've been prepping for a hurricane, so you have to forgive me. I've been kind of pulling double duty. Well, hello, Dave.
Hi.
I thought today we were going to talk about bionics that are increasing in the medical research area. We remember the $6 Million Man 1974 to 78 TV show with Lee Majors as the guy with all the bionics. Remember that? He could leap tall buildings and all that good stuff. Now, research into the bionics, though, has kind of been around a while, and it's been the focus of research in the area of prosthetics. So a lot of motorized limbs with the capability to function more like natural ones and to have even some more strength and even the feel and sensation that we're also accustomed to feeling with our own limbs. So we're going to check it out and see what area is rocking here. I know they got a bionic eye that they want to roll out. So according to the Smithsonian Institute, there's a company called Touch Bionics, and they're manufacturing these bionic mechanical limbs. They call them eye limbs. And so the prosthetics are becoming more sophisticated, even more natural looking. And they contain even lifelike skin to the touch with sensors that replicate this feeling of sensation so that the amputee can feel the touch. And they even have heat sensors so that the skin feels like body temperature. They have software as well as a lot of batteries and microcompressors in them. And the exterior skin, like I said, feels like real skin and has a body temperature. And the goal of the industry, though, is to make all these bionics to be able to connect these limbs to the human brain itself so that quadriplegics and amputees are able to have full control of their artificial limbs. So they're moving along with that kind of technology. They're also using it, of course, in the robot industry. So it may maybe become impossible in the future, Melanie and Dave, to identify the difference between a robot and a human. Just think about that.
That's frightening. Mm.
It is crazy. Well, what could be driving this revolution? Well, the bionic industry has really gone ahead. They've actually are making a whole bionic man. And their bionic version of this human will even have internal organs that are all bionic. And these organs are being designed to be used also. It's a double thing where they want to make these bionic organs for their bionic man, but also to be used in humans. So, you know, it's like a replacement part. So they already have a bionic spleen, a pancreas, and even bionic lungs. And so science is saying they've had some success with about 50% of their bionic man. They're having trouble with the blood flow problem, though, when they want to use these into people who are still human. You know, blood flows through your lungs, and they haven't figured out how to get the bionic part to work with that. Now, here's a quote from Rich Walker. He's the director of Touch Bionics. He says, the question is, hey, how much of a human being can be replaced and still be considered human? I mean... Right? Well, you know, that takes your brain to left field on a lot of things. The question science really is trying to figure out is, will the implanted technologies interfere with how the person relates with other people, how they see themselves? And I'm sure the industry is going to evolve, and there's going to be some questions that we never thought we'd be asking. Here's a couple of them. Does a bionic man or a robot have human rights?
Well, I believe there's already been some court cases involving that.
Right. Okay, so how can a bionic man or robot become president?
Why not?
Well, can a bionic man that's half human marry a robot?
Why not?
I'm telling you, the whole subject can get a bit ridiculous. But you know, I'm all for amputees, paralyzed people feeling more whole, regaining lost functions. But I think the cutoff maybe in this technology would be where it tends to want to offer superhuman capabilities, such as a brain that functions as fast as a computer, or the bionic eye that can see much further or through barriers. Let's face it, the average person, if they knew someone had, let's say, a bionic hand. Let me ask you, Dave, if you knew somebody had a bionic hand, what would be going through your hand when your head when they want to shake your hand?
Just thinking to myself, gentle, please, gentle.
Yeah, yeah, can they crush your hand? Right? And so designing products that will move and operate like the human body is a huge challenge, but we want to make sure that they don't go into this superhuman, you know, supersize my bionic, please, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you, where do you suppose prosthetics started? How far back did we go?
Huh. Has to be, I would think it was during or after some major war.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Well, actually, the ancient Egyptians were the first to make prosthetics.
Oh, well.
Yep, and 3,000-year-old mummy had a fake toe, and it was made out of wood and attached with a leather strap around his foot. So more functional and mechanical limbs actually got created later on in the 16th century, but the Egyptians were the first to go there. Now, the biggest problem that they're having with a lot of this artificial technology, even when it comes to, you know, bionic pancreases and lungs, is the body wants to reject this kind of thing. You know, it sees it as a non-self kind of foreign material, and your immune system wants to attack it. So the immune system sees the bionics as something that shouldn't be there, and then a lot of inflammation occurs. So the artificial pancreas has some bugs that they're trying to work out. They're testing it in animals, but the animals have so far had severe immune system reactions. They even developed adhesions that formed around creating scar tissue, and then it petrified. So that's a problem. And then again, like the lungs, the huge dilemma there with the lungs, because they can't get the blood to flow through there without clotting. So that's a problem. Anybody want to take a guess what a bionic limb might run you as far as cost?
Pretty expensive, I would assume.
Well, I think the market may limit that at first, but there is some hope on the horizon for amputees and stuff with insurance companies. A bionic robotic upper limb, depending on how sophisticated you're getting, it starts at $20,000 but goes to $120,000.
That's less than I thought.
Private insurance is paying about 50%. However, some insurance companies are finding out that when you get a limb like this, the long-term care for, let's say, amputees is lower because the bionic devices fit better, are lighter. There's less, I guess, ulcers and injury to rubbing and wear, less stress on the joints, as well as less diseases that flare up like arthritis and things later. So they're starting to cover more 80% of the cost because it costs them less long term on that patient. So right now, this area is pretty much exploding. It's a little pricey right now, and investors are kind of shy. But in about 15 years, you're going to see everything kind of really hitting the market there. And there's a lot of enthusiastic scientists with a lot of plans for helping even stroke patients and patients with bone diseases. So they want to make bionic bones. Not kidding you.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
But so what could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Well, I'm going to talk about this bionic eye because this is what caught my eye at first, no pun intended. Researchers at University of Minnesota, they used a 3D printer. And they included light receptors to produce this prototype of a bionic eye. Their research was printed in the Journal of Advanced Materials. So they say it's going to help the blind to see. Here's a quote from one of the chief engineers, Michael McAlpine. He says, "Bionic eyes are thought of as a science fiction item, but now we're closer than ever using multiple materials with 3D printers." So the researchers, what they did, they had a real challenge. How are they going to print electronics on a curved surface? You know, your eyeballs curved. So what they did is they were using a base ink that had silver particles through the printer, and then they experimented with semiconducting polymers to print photoiodides to convert the light to electricity to send a signal to the brain. So at this stage, the process takes, though, about an hour for that signal to get through, so they got to work on that. They decided to try the 3D printer because the microfabrication facilities really can't print on the curved surfaces. So now the same team did win an award in 2017 for printing a bionic ear that was so lifelike people couldn't tell. So the 3D printer is really becoming an essential tool within scientific medical research because it can print lifelike organs. So they're looking also at creating more bionic skin. They're trying to perfect and improve on that. And this next challenge with the bionic eye is to print it now on a soft semi-spherical material, not something that's so rigid and hard, so they can use it in implantation for humans. So, but you know, my question is, you know, what kind of super duper vision are you going to get with that?
Well, you know what's fascinating is that it all comes from the 3D printers. Pretty soon you'll be able to 3D print a spouse. Program it to kind of, you know, print out your spouse. I don't know. It's bizarre. But.
Well, yeah, I do have some questions, though, regarding this side of medicine. You know,
men of the world are in trouble, ladies.
Well, we have to guard against this area could get really corrupted quick. So I have some questions. Here's some of my questions. You may have your own, but mine are, could bionics be crafted to offer an unfair advantage instead of just bridging the gap for the lost function? That's a question I have. The other one is, could bionics lend itself to become a superhero obsession for some people? And the other is, could a black market of unauthorized bionics develop, offering more than the standard human capabilities?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yes.
Well, we live in interesting times. And this whole area of technology, this bionic, is really at a fast pace. I mean, I reported on it, 2 years ago, and it's really come a long way. And, you know, look at the robots that are coming along, too. So some argue that humans are already on the road of becoming a slave to technology. I think we're there. I do.
I think we are, too. Absolutely.
So, I'm disturbed is a word I'm looking for regarding the sex robot area that's developing. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think what it's going to do is polarize people further, because you don't have to work at a relationship then.
And we're gonna talk a little bit about later in the program. It's gonna be our about how these kids today prefer doing things on, you know, on their cell phones to where they don't have to talk to people. So they're already conditioning these kids to the youth and the next generation to, you know, perhaps.
You're right. I mean, they're losing a whole lot, even though the technology is very convenient and you can do things. But, I mean, for instance, a lot of these kids don't realize you can't text 911. You have to call them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yep. Which is a real problem. You see it on the side of buses. They're trying to educate the youth. The other thing is kids can't read a clock.
I know.
It's all digital. So, I mean, can you imagine being, you know, I don't know, a pilot for the military and incoming at 2 o'clock, what are they going to say? Oh, well, that's in an hour.
Well, you know? 1,300 hours, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're clearly raising some real important, I mean, ethical questions,
yep.
Wendy. And, you know, there's always been a push-pull, you know, between ethics and the good old profit motive. You know, when it comes to advances in technology. And, you know, one of my pet peeves over the years has been that, you know, a lot of these debates are taking place among those, mainly among those who can profit from the decisions. And, yeah, I just hope that, you know, when, you know, before it's too late, that, you know, the just general AI issue in general, with, you know, which bionics I would believe is an important part, you know, will become a broad-based discussion among all people.
Well, actually, there's a whole area called bioethics now because of what you're just saying. So they are wrestling with it. But, you know, I'd rather take care of my original equipment than to go with anything bionic. So, you know, that's what we specialize in, organ cleansing and immune boosting and metabolic strengthening. So if anybody wants a catalog, give us a call at Apothecary Herbs. It's 866-229-3663. We have a website, thepowerherbs.com. And as we buckle down for the storm and get through
You be safe, Wendy.
Yep. Yep. We're working on it. God willing.
All righty. Keep me posted.
We'll do.
Hang in.
See you now. All right. Bye.
All righty. Bye-bye, Wendy. She does a great job. In fact, she left a little bit earlier. And you know what's amazing? Dave, isn't what she just talked about more about the desire to live forever, to spend the money that they make off of us?
No, I think at the root of that, that's an excellent observation.
And we're observing. We're heading into our break. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
We will find you acting on your best.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs live right from the website. Go to the radio page, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And also the archives are posted. And, you know, it's funny, after we came out of the month of August, it started building up in, you know, I'd say at the middle of July, but things are really beginning to pick up as far as people out there trying to secure gold and silver at these lower prices. And it always amazes me, Dave, that there's always those who think that, well, gold's going to drop another $200. I think I'm going to wait. No, ladies and gentlemen, gold is not going to drop another $200. You know, silver is not going to go to $13. We came close. It almost broke $14, but I'm talking about the low $13. And it's not going to happen, not when the reports that are coming out. And, you know, as we go along, things are going to get a little more. I think, Dave, the euphoria of this, you know, discussions of things are doing great, economies, I think we're going to have a reversal here, and I think we're going to start seeing it undone. But this is interesting. Kind of goes against. You have the, according to the government today, the U.S. producer prices fell in August, recording their first drop in 1.5 years, as declines in the prices of food and a range of trade services offset an increase in the cost of energy products. The Labor Department said this morning that its producer price index, the PPI, for final demand slipped 0.1% last month after being unchanged in July. And August has fallen. The PPI was the first since February of 2017. And in the 12 months through August, the PPI rose 2.8%. And slowing further after July's 3.3% increase. So everyone was sort of had forecasted the PPI increasing. And so what say you, Dave?
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at things, Melody. I mean, the 12 months through August, the core PPI increased 2.9% after rising just 2.8% the month before. You know, the core, like with the other measures of inflation, namely the CPI and the PCE, exclude food and energy. But, you know, despite this moderation in producer prices last month, overall inflation still is steadily rising, and that's against the backdrop of a strong labor market and, you know, a reported robust economy that, as reported by the government and Wall Street. Now, the administration's import tariffs on lumber, washing machines, solar panels, steel, and aluminum, as well as a range of Chinese goods, are also expected to push up price pressures in the coming months. The Fed's preferred inflation measure, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, again excluding food and energy, increased 2% in July. That once again hit the Fed's 2% target for the third time this year. What a coincidence, Melody. Wholesale food prices fell 0.6% last month, pulled down by sharp declines in the cost of eggs and fresh fruits and melons. Food prices, and that's a seasonal fluctuation. Food prices dipped 0.1% in July. You know, that's the numbers are what they say, I guess.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we just talk about how they were changing the equation
for
the PPI?
For the PPI, yes. I don't know what that is, what that change is, because they've talked about it, but until they actually, report this new methodology, it was just, not that I was skeptical, I just figured, well, it's only news when we learn that there's actually, this new method's been implemented. I don't know if these new numbers reflect that new methodology or not. There was no reporting on it, let's put it that way.
Well, wouldn't it be in their best interest to see the PPI fall?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that this is why we got, and we've seen the increases in, for a year and a half. And, we could have a month, after a year and a half of prices increasing, we could see, take a breather and so forth. But it's kind of interesting that, if they're changing the equation in their calculations and all of a sudden they have a drop to benefit them, you kind of think, huh?
Yeah.
Huh. So, but we did have, after the over 80% of the drop in the cost from this report of services last month was attributed to margins for machines and equipment wholesaling, and that fell to 1.7%. You still have rises in healthcare services, hospitals, and things like that. So those prices did tick up. This is something interesting because this is what everyone talks about is the strength of the economy, is the strength, I shouldn't say the economy, but the strength of the consumer is homes, buying homes. And we've seen a pretty sharp rise in mortgage interest rates, and it's could be finally taking a toll on the lending business. Last week, the mortgage applications volume fell 1.8% for the week. And that was according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, that a seasonally adjusted report. Volume was 18% lower compared with the same week 1 year ago. I don't know if anybody thinks that that's a big drop, 18%, but I do.
That's one in five.
That's a pretty big drop. And
one out of 20 out of 100 people less out of 100 people are applying this year.
And the refinance volume, that fell 6% for the week and was 39% lower than a year ago. So people aren't even refinancing their homes. Mortgage rates, again, were significantly lower a year ago. And again, it wasn't that big of a difference, Dave. What's going to happen if they continue with the increase? It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Because really, people, and I've heard people say, what's the big deal with a few quarter point increases at the Fed? Well, this is it. This is what happens.
Yeah, this is what leads to bubbles, housing bubbles.
Yeah, yep, and the collapse of them. And so the average contract interest rate for the 30-year fixed rate mortgages with conforming loan balances was $453,000 or less, increased to 4.8% from 4.8% last week, Dave.
Yeah, mortgage apps to purchase a home, which are less rate sensitive, week to week anyway, rose 1% last week and were 4% higher than a year ago. Purchase volume has, been notably weak this year as affordability constraints are hitting demand. Home prices continue to surge, although at a lower pace than last year, but prices have already surpassed their 2006 peak. And lending today is much stricter now, after the financial crisis. As a result, lenders are more bearish on demand, at least according to a recent Fannie Mae survey. The net share of lenders reporting demand growth over the last 3 months as well as the net share reporting growth expectations for the next 3 months, reached the lowest readings for any third quarter in history, well, of the four-year survey. You know, Fannie Mae's chief economist said, for the first time this year, consumer demand was one of the top two reasons for a downbeat profit outlook, you know, cited by more than one-third of lenders. That's the record high. So, yeah, you're certainly right, Melody.
Can you say that again, Dave? I just like hearing that. No, I'm just kidding. I don't, you know, I don't like hearing that at all. Oh, we're all right all the time. Anyway, oil prices today is the highest level this year, and oil prices continue to rally. And we've seen, you know, and this is after we had a pretty nice drop in the U.S. crude inventories. And as the prospect of the loss of Iranian supply continues to add concerns over the deliberate or the delicate balance between consumption and production, Brent crude futures were up 41 cents on the day, having touched a session peak when the prices did push above $80. And U.S. crude futures show 91 cents to 70.16 a barrel. And that's what we talk about today, or that what I reported earlier today. So Brent crude futures, that's huge. 79.47, that's huge. Yeah. I think the oil – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think the oil market fundamentals are increasingly supportive of crude prices, at least at these current levels. That was from the HSBC's global head of oil and gas research. He says we aren't explicitly forecasting Brent to rise to $100 a barrel. Well, that's where they want it to go, but there are real risks of that happening. So,
yeah, boy, talk about an impact on the global economies, but the U.S. in particular. U.S. crude inventories were expected to have fallen by 800,000 barrels last week. Data published by the American Petroleum Institute yesterday showed a fall of $8.6 million, excuse me. Outside the U.S., traders have been focusing on the impact of U.S. sanctions against Iran that are, you know, going to be targeting oil exports beginning in November. Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak this morning warned of the impact of U.S. sanctions against Iran. He said, "This is a huge uncertainty on the market, how countries which buy almost 2 million barrels per day of Iranian oil will act. The situation should be closely watched and the right decision should be taken." Novak said global markets were fragile due to that and other geopolitical risks, as well as supply disruptions.
Yeah, there's so many things that are coming our way. We see OPEC.
That's one Freudian slip.
That's a big one. OPEC is cutting its forecast for oil demand growth in 2019 in its monthly report and said rising challenges in some emerging and developing countries could negatively impact global economic growth. And so we're going to have to see what happens with this Hurricane Florence. That's supposed to make a landfall by Friday. And it is a very dangerous situation. Again, they're not telling, you know, no one's talking about the number of nuclear plants that could be affected by this storm. And there's a lot of other things I was reading about. There's huge, is it pork, pig wastes?
Yeah.
You know, and all it's...
A lot of that in North Carolina.
Yes. So
it's a huge pollutant concern.
So they've got some major obstacles with this. And, you know, we've been blessed here in Maryland. It doesn't seem that at the last minute it's kind of going a little bit to the south more. And so we got to make sure we keep all of those. And, you know, Greg Hunter is one. He's in the Carolinas. Wendy Wilson's in the Carolinas. So, and, you know, all my customers, I get tons of customers in those states. So we ought to got to, you know, say a prayer for them and hope the best for them. So, Ben Bernanke, I'm not a fan. You know, he's helicopter Ben. They used all these, basically printed us out of the 2008 financial crisis. And, they used all these extraordinary tools at the Fed in order to do that. They didn't want it to fail. They didn't want it to collapse. And, we're at our 10-year anniversary of the 2008 financial crisis. And so when you look at the Fed, they are between a rock and a hard place. They can't, they're having a hard time putting those tools away. We had Lehman Brothers failed 10 years ago. The Fed and other government agencies, again, took all types of actions to head off the collapse of the financial system. They wanted to save the bankers. And, so the Fed is still trying to unwind some of those moves. And, they're really between a rock and a hard place because they really can't unwind some or all of those moves. Mark Cambana, who's the head of the U.S. short rate strategy at Bank of America, said the market is still dealing with a lot of those issues today. And it's taking a long time to undo some of the actions that were put in place during the financial crisis. So,
yeah, I mean, the Bernanke Fed used untested measures, as we know, such as pumping liquidity into the banking system, slashing interest rates to zero, and buying treasury and mortgage securities and, their quantitative easing program that it just ballooned its balance sheet to a high of $4.5 trillion. In the post-regulatory response, banks were reined in, at least initially, largely by Dodd-Frank, and were subjected to higher capital requirements and mandatory stress tests, which we talked about the other day. Now, Bernanke's successor, Janet Yellen, made the first moves to, we'll call it, normalizing interest rates, at least in the eyes of the Fed. And now the newer Fed chair, Jerome Powell, he's been, board has been raising rates and chiseling away at the balance sheet with the program to taper back purchases of those securities. For consumers, the Fed policy reversal means mortgage rates are rising and other consumer loans are, a lot more expensive than they had been. The 30-year fixed rate mortgage, is more than 15% above the rate a year ago when it was, just shy of 4%. And interest rate incentives such as 0% financing on autos, which we saw a lot of the previous few years, are also going away.
And we're going to go away for a few short minutes, and we'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedars from here with Dave Allen.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. Give us a call, ladies and gentlemen. We got some great prices. Get it while it's low. And we got some 90% 50-cent pieces in, and we've got some, well, we got everything in. And contrary to what you might hear, that, oh, the mint is no longer making the Silver Eagles, there's no delays in any products. I mean, the biggest delay I had is I had a gentleman buy a significant amount of 1 ounce Canadian maple leaves, and the Brinks truck didn't arrive in time yesterday, so, you know, he's going out. I mean, it has nothing to do with the shortage of any type of product and so forth. So inventory is flowing, and so it's you know, it's the normal. Everything is readily available. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And, you know, Dave, we talk a lot about, market corrections and the fundamentals that create these market corrections. We're way overdue for a correction, and the correction is going to be, what, 50, 70%, we believe. Well, here's another gentleman that sees a near-term trouble that's coming our way. And he says, while midterm election years are typically associated with third quarter pullbacks, his latest indicators suggest the ultimate catalyst could come from abroad. He says international issues are just as likely to drive corrections in midterm years as domestic issues. In a world where emerging markets are struggling and trade war fallout is lurking, this year may be even more vulnerable. He says it's a risk that's largely underestimated on Wall Street. We certainly in the weakest time of the year, seasonably for the market. He says he wouldn't be surprised in the next several weeks that there's quite a bit of volatility to the markets. And that is Ned Davis Research's Ed Clissold, who is making these statements. So somebody else, Dave, is just confirming. He says with the higher interest rates and slowing economic growth could also leave the bull market stunted. And he says it's all a recipe for a bigger decline. So all of this is going to set the stage for a bigger correction. I don't think he's calling for a 50 or 70% correction, but that's what I see happening. So once that first domino drops, there's a lot of dominoes after that, and I think we'll see what, you know, it's going to be more severe than what we experienced in 2008. We can't forget our segment, Dave, on Brevity is Golden.
Indeed.
And this is what we mentioned early in the beginning when Wendy was talking about sex robots and, communications between people. This was a report I saw where teen communication and their preferences. And it's very interesting.
It's true. You know, a new survey finds that today's teens prefer texting over in-person communication. 35% versus 32%. Frankly, I'm surprised it's that close. Social media came in third at a distant 16%, followed by video chatting at 10. But they also use social media multiple times a day and admit that digital distractions interfere with homework, personal relationships, and, yes, sleep. Concerns over the negative impact of social media have increased recently, especially with reports of teen depression, suicide, and cyberbullying on the rise. Now, this study of 13 to 17-year-olds by Common Sense Media, that's a nonprofit group focused on tech and media's impact on kids, shows that teens have a complicated relationship with technology. Melody, here are a couple of the study's key findings. 81% of teens use social media, with 70% saying they use it several times a day. That's up, closing in on triple from the 30-plus percent in 2012. And now virtually 9 out of 10 have their own smart phone. And that's more than double since 2012. Also, 72% of teens believe that tech companies manipulate users to spend more time on devices. And the proportion of teens who prefer in-person interaction has actually plummeted from 49% in 2012 to 32% these days.
That's a big drop.
Yeah, and 13% of teens say they've been cyberbullied. That's up from 5% 6 years ago. Ironically, a third of them say they wish their parents would spend less time on their devices. You know, that's up from 20-plus percent in 2012. So the social life conundrum, Melody, a majority, actually a little bit more, 54% of teens agree that using social media often distracts them when they're with people. And 44% say they get frustrated when their friends are using their phones while hanging out. Yet 55% they hardly ever or never put their devices away when they're with friends. Last but not least here, you know, Vicky Rideout, who is the independent researcher who conducted this year's study, says, I wonder if we're seeing the beginnings of some weird negative feedback loop where we can't help but be on our devices when we're with other people, and we get upset with others for being distracted by their devices when they're with us. So therefore, we don't want to hang out with people in person anymore because it's easier to interact with them on our devices. We live in interesting times, as you say, Melody, and that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
I actually think it's harder to communicate when using my phone device because I'm wordy, and I'm just, and it loses the whole meaning. Sure. And so it's so for me, it's more, but what I thought was interesting about this is where you said that, where can I find that? Where the teens wanted their parents, 44%. No, where was it that said that there was a pretty large percentage?
A 33% of teens said they wish their parents would spend less time on phones primarily.
So I wonder if parents spent less time on their phone, that some of these numbers would change.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it raises the question, who's leading?
Who's parenting?
Or
yes.
Not leading by example? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I find that stat illuminating.
That was, that they actually could. Yeah. So again, it's the times that we live in, and it's your social media truly is, I don't know, the social media is basically raising your child.
Yeah, I like, you're right.
Influencing, not raising, right. Influencing, yeah. The direction, the thoughts. So it's kind of frightening. But, it kind of goes hand in hand with what Wendy was talking about today and during her segment, because these children will just embrace that they love the technology, unless maybe they get burned out on it.
Yeah, technology for the sake of it. I remember when I was when I ran an organization 10, 15, 20 years ago, you'd always have a fairly significant software system to run, your accounting package, your budgeting, and what have you, your human resources. And I remember, my finance team saying that, the two or three times that the company we were using, was promoting an upgrade. And I mean, thankfully, my general inclination was, oh wow, this is new features, perhaps we ought to, you know, try it. And the feedback I would get was, no, please let's not do it just because it's there. Think of the impact that we just got finished learning the last, you know, version. And it surely is a generational issue, perhaps not as much as it had been 20 years ago, but when you see the millennials, and especially their proclivity for technologies, I'm worried in a parental sense, in a general societal communication sense.
And, you know, we're going to go into this article here. I'm not sure if we talked about this once before. Maybe I did with Butch. I don't recall. But I think it is interesting because it is a sign of the times. And, again, when we look at the moral decay of our society, I think this plays a large part into it, just not here, but also around the world. And it gives us an idea what direction we're heading in. And this is, again, you have China. Their government, they're ratcheting up a crackdown on Christian congregations in Beijing and several other provinces. They're destroying crosses, they're burning Bibles, they're shutting churches, they're ordering followers to sign papers renouncing their faith. And according to, and this is according to pastors in a group that monitors religion in China. The campaign corresponds with a drive to sinicize religion by demanding loyalty to the officially atheist Communist Party and eliminating any challenge to its power over people's lives.
Scary stuff.
It is.
You know, no matter your faith, President for Life Xi Jinping, you know, under his reign now, religious believers are seeing freedom shrink dramatically. And, you know, even as the country undergoes a religious revival, you know, experts and activists are saying that, you know, as he consolidates his power now under the Communist Party's support, you know, Xi is waging the most severe systematic suppression of Christianity since religious freedom was written into the Chinese Constitution in 1982.
That long ago.
Hmm. Yeah, it's the first time since Mao's, cultural revolution in the, mid-60s and 70s. You know, Christians have been compelled to make declarations that, they're reportedly being forced to now, under pain of expulsion from school and the loss of state welfare benefits. Crazy stuff, Melody.
It is. And the Chinese law requires religious believers to worship only in congregations registered with the authorities, but many millions belong to so-called underground or house churches that defy these government restrictions. And the Zion Church, which is the largest in Beijing, was shut down yesterday by around 60 government workers. And it is, and there's a bigger thing here too. Yes, but how does a country, how does Xi Jinping work with a Christian nation? Because we are a Christian nation. So does it have any impact in future relationships with the country of China? I don't know, but. So it is kind of interesting that all of a sudden, of course, after he gained his position, his lifetime appointee as president of the country, you're seeing these changes, and it's to support the communists, and that's what everybody has forgotten. It's Red China for a reason. It's communists, and I think people have forgotten. And I think they're going back to their old, they're enforcing their ways. So,
yeah, crazy stuff.
Cryptos.
The cryptocurrency bear market plummeted afresh to a fresh 10-month low that was actually yesterday, as Bitcoin's biggest rival tumbled and U.S. regulators suspended trading in two securities linked to digital assets. Ether, Ethereum, the second largest virtual currency, slumped 10% from its level at 5 p.m. New York time late last week. Bitcoin's down, what is it, $640 billion from its January peak.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, and cryptocurrencies have declined for five of the past 6 weeks amid a concern that a broader adoption of digital assets are going to take longer than some had anticipated. Yeah, much longer, if at all.
Yep.
Boy, gosh, folks, if you're banking, I shouldn't say banking, if you're thinking of or have already invested your disposable income into some of these digital currencies, oh, God bless you, get out of them. It's an accident waiting to happen. I think we're in the midst of that right now. The fact that our own U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission suspended trading in two exchange-traded notes linked to cryptocurrencies, I think that says a lot.
Absolutely, it does. And we're also saying we're out of time, and I really wanted to talk about the new payday loan out of the U.S. banks. So we'll bring that to you on Friday. So till then, I'll see you Friday, Dave. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back tomorrow with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Stay safe with the hurricane. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me, I'll be